and now. I don't think you can put two people together anywhere in this country that know more about our border than Duncan Hunter and Duncan Hunter. We will not tolerate disruptive behavior today. If you come to learn about the border, great, welcome. If you come to disrupt this meeting, you will be asked one time, politely, to leave. If not, we've hired a ton of security to help you out. All right. So, we have a congressman here that had 14 terms in the House of Representatives. 14 terms in the House of Representatives. He's a veteran. You all know who he is. I don't have to go into his extensive background. Please welcome Duncan L. Hunter. Congressman here in his sixth term of serving our district, Duncan D. Hunter. Now, this is how it's going to work. I'm going to be your moderator. We have prepared a number of questions that we'll ask these gentlemen, and it will delve deeply into border issues, all right? If at the end there's time, you can line up over here and you can ask a few questions, all right? So.
This is yours?
Okay. We only have two microphones, all right, we got a budget. All right. Start out with Duncan D. This is D. This is L. Why is the border issue so important, both here in our region, but also nationally?
Sure. Thanks for having us here today. If you look at it big picture, here's how I see it. I did two tours in Iraq and one in Afghanistan, and the commander-in-chief's job is to protect America. That's his first and foremost job, is national security. The border is not just a social issue. It's really not about immigration, even though with all the asylum cases that where tens of thousands of people are coming across right now, it's a legal issue, but more importantly, it's a security issue. And the commander-in-chief, if he has the ability, prerogative, and executive power to send troops to Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, then he sure as hell has the executive power to secure us here at home by putting military troops on the border. So number one, it's a national security issue, and the president has the authority and prerogative to secure our nation if we're being invaded right here at home, let alone overseas. So that's number one. And number two, you need people in this country. The president came out last week. I was at the White House in the Rose Garden when the president announced his new policy of a merit-based immigration system, meaning you get to come here if you're worth having here. I know that sounds mean, but just because you want to come here from another country doesn't mean you get to. Right. There's a price to be paid to be an American. Right. I paid that price. My dad paid the price. Everybody that stood here paid that price. And our forefathers paid that price in the Revolutionary War. This means something to be an American, and unless you grasp that, we don't want you here. You have to contribute, you have to be a part of the fabric of what makes this country great, and understand what it is that makes a country great, and be able to contribute and not just take.
Thank you. What was the border region like when you first came to Congress in 1981?
Well, thanks, Dan. And you know, I would, to answer that question, what was the border like? Let me make a recommendation that the Joseph Wambaugh, the great author, best-selling author, who wrote the book The Onion Field, which was a New York Times bestseller for years, wrote the book that defined San Diego, the San Diego-Tijuana border, shortly before 1981, and it was called Lines and Shadows. And I think it's important for people to know about this because it's a story of San Diego County. It's an important part of our history. And what was happening was the border was a no man's land. And everybody knows that here, that you didn't go down to the border when it got close to being dark, that the people were coming who were coming across were being robbed, raped, and murdered. And Wambaugh starts out the book, Lines and Shadows, and I'd recommend getting the book by simply reading the police blotter. And here's what it would say. Man's body found in Smuggler's Gulch, 2 a.m., decapitated. Body found with throat cut in Goat Canyon, 4 a.m. Rape in progress stopped by Border Patrol agents, 6 a.m. Just reading the police blotter, he basically illustrated to people that read that book what a no man's land it was and how dangerous it was. It was so bad that Chief Colander, remember Chief Colander? He put together a task force of people led by Sergeant Lopez who dressed like illegal aliens. And they would go down to the border heavily armed. And when the border gangs accosted them and tried to rob them, they would pull back their serapes and be loaded armed to the hilt, and they'd have a heck of a gunfight that they always won. And they finally went out of business when Sergeant Lopez was accosted by three off-duty Tijuana police officers who were making extra money robbing the illegal aliens. But that's how bad it was. In fact, they got shot up in the ensuing firefight by Sergeant Lopez and his people. And when they tried to rob him, and they claimed that he said, please don't rob us, we only have $10,000 today. And then they came across the border, they had a big firefight, Colander put them out of business. That's what the border was like. It was a no man's land. So in 1990, we had 300 drug trucks a month, approximately, roaring across the border, filled with cocaine and other drugs, and they would come right across at Otay Mesa, right across the sagebrush, run up to Highway 5 and 805 and get lost in the traffic. So I contacted Dick Cheney, and was then with George H.W. Bush, and he got us some Army Reservist welders who could weld steel, and we looked around the world, at bases around the world, we found 79,000 steel landing mats. And we brought them in. And those are the big landing mats. They're 10 feet long, they're 2 feet wide, they're a quarter inch thick. If you knit them together in Saudi Arabia, you can make a runway in the middle of the desert. You can make a landing area for your warplanes. But if you turn them horizontal, they make a heck of a wall. We put up that initial primary border fence using Army Reservist welders, and we totally stopped the 300 drug trucks a month. A few of them actually tried to bash through it. But that's what, Dan, to answer your question, that's what it was. It was a no man's land where nobody went at night. And after we got finished building the border fence, one last statistic. We started the double fence in the early 1990s. When we got finished building it, we not only brought down the smuggling of people, there were 202,000 apprehensions in that fence area between San Diego and Tijuana. In 1990, when we finished the border fence, except for a few gaps that you had for historic reasons, which I never quite understood, we'd taken it down to 9,000. That's a 95% reduction in smuggling. The crime rate in San Diego County went down by FBI statistic by 54.3% when we finished the border fence. So we took away the mobility of the gang. So that was the effect of the border fence, and that's why, as you notice, the caravans are not trying to cross at San Diego anymore. They're going to other states because they couldn't get through the double border fence in San Diego.
Thank you, Duncan. Duncan D., what have been the direct benefits of the border wall in terms of national security and our economy?
Well, to start off, the direct benefits have been that massive drop in crime and drugs that have been able to come into San Diego. But what it's done is also it's pushed it into other states and it's pushed it into the water as well. You got high-speed panga boats coming in. You have semi-submersibles coming in from South and Central America. It's like squeezing a balloon, right? When you squeeze a balloon here, it expands in other areas. And that's what's happening when it comes to drug trafficking. But they've been massive. It's much harder to cross the border illegally, except for what you have now, when it just takes stepping one foot on the U.S. soil and claiming asylum with a fake child. Okay, so that is the way that things are going now. No one's trying to jump the border fence. You don't have people with ladders. You have the drug guys still trying to tunnel underneath, but you don't have people running away from Border Patrol now. They're running to Border Patrol. So the security has been so good and so upped in the last two decades that now people have learned American law and are using our own laws against us to basically infiltrate and overrun the country. So I guess to make it simple, the security was so good, and it is so good and getting better, that the people that want to be here illegally aren't driving trucks through. They're not trying to race past Border Patrol guards. They're coming over, making as much noise as they can, waving flashlights and saying, "Here we are. We all want asylum and a hot shower and a meal and a bed. Thank you." So that's the way that it's changed. In San Diego especially, I think it's just much more secure than it ever has been. You can now go shopping on the border. That's where I go to the outlet mall there to buy suits. You never had that. You have a new mall with an Apple store in it down by the border. You have houses that are on the border. And if any of the news cameras here go and ask any of those people that live along the border now, if they would have lived there prior to 2000 or 1995, their answer would have been, heck no. It was too dangerous. But now you can live and thrive, and it's a safe place to be as opposed to a no man's land.
Thank you. Duncan L., when you were putting together your border fence, did you have any opposition from the Democrat Party then? Because as everyone knows, they're all lining up against the fence today.
Well, Dan, as you know, I don't belong to any organized party myself. I'm a Republican. But the answer is, and actually, this answer may surprise you. Until the border issue was perceived to be a national issue by the Democrats, they actually supported us. Wow. For example, in 2006, I wrote a bill that passed the House, the Senate, and President W. Bush signed it into law that extended the San Diego border fence 853 miles across the smuggling areas of Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. Hillary Clinton voted for that bill as a U.S. Senator.
Wow.
I believe Obama voted for it. I don't know how Nancy Pelosi voted, but it was very similar to when Ronald Reagan came out for missile defense. The idea of stopping missiles before they hit our cities. And the Democrats all said, we're against missile defense, even those who had supported it before. When the Democrats perceived that this was a political issue and that they were perhaps going to get votes, because their consultants told them, you're going to get votes from these armies of people that are coming north. We're going to tell them we're their party. We're going to get votes from them. They decided basically to take the casualties. And that is the people who are hurt by the bad people that come in. And the 200 or so illegal aliens who die in the deserts of Arizona and Texas, many of dehydration because they came in. The smuggler said that the roads a mile to the north was actually 20 miles to the north, and at 10 o'clock in the morning the next day they're dying of thirst. The National Democrat Party has decided to take those casualties in order to keep this border open, and it's sad. And again, I think the great question to ask, I think what the president ought to do is say, hey, I'll take the Hillary fence, the one that she voted for in 2006, that takes this double fence 853 miles across those western states. So you've had a polarization as a result of this, and what we've got to do is appeal to people, whether they're Democrat or Republican. We've got to appeal to people to put their pressure on lawmakers who right now are being controlled by the liberal leadership in Washington, D.C. Get them to respond to their people.
Thank you. Duncan D., can you give us a little information about the length of our border, how much of it is actually fenced, and how much of it is wide open?
It'd be good if I would have studied up on those numbers, Dan, before I came here. So the only fencing that we have, the majority of it is in California, in Southern California. They're building now in Calexico. They're building, obviously, we're going to extend San Diego. Texas has intermittent fence, and it's not the real fence. It's poles in the ground. It's hard to get a number. The only real fence that we have is the fence that Trump has built, and the landing mat fence that you see as you drive out to Imperial Valley, and the double border fence in San Diego. The rest of it is called vehicle barriers, and that's it. So when I was in Yuma, Arizona, there's no border fence at all, but about 50 meters on the U.S. side of the border, there are those kind of anti-tank crosses, they're like tic-tac pieces, that are sitting there so that vehicles can't jump across the border and bring drugs in. But that's it. Meaning, for people to come across, there is no barrier whatsoever, zero. Except for this new fence that the president is building now. And I'll tell you, he didn't mention this, but the initial San Diego fence was earmarked. Meaning, he couldn't get the Republicans or the Democrats or the president at the time to come together and say, we're going to appropriate this money. He used his prerogative as the representative of that region to say, I'm going to use the taxpayer money from my district to build the border fence. The same as I would do for Highway 67. He earmarked the Highway 5267 interchange 15 years ago. We don't do earmarks anymore. So we have to write letters to the Department of Transportation, the Department of Homeland Security, to do things like the border fence or expand roads that are in our districts, driven by our constituents.
Thank you. Thank you. The Democrat Party, the progressives, the left, the communists, at one time supported a border wall. Now they're opposed to it. And I think we all realize that illegal aliens are voting in our elections. What role does that vote play in their opposition to a border wall?
Dan, I think they've made everything the National Party does, they do around a strategy table with their consultants coming in and telling them what the results will be or what they think a particular position is going to do politically for them. And as I said, you have massive casualties in this country because of no border control. And Texas is one of the few states that keeps track of the robberies, the rapes, the murders that occur by the bad people that come in that are also intermittent and mixed in with the pictures that most of the fairly liberal media shows, which shows families coming in. You also had, I was down with the Border Patrol, and they had, they said that, like, last November, they had one stretch where 42% of the people were gang members. So there is a massive human toll that is taken in terms of Americans being hurt by these guys coming in. And as I said, 22% of inmates in federal penitentiaries are illegal aliens. That's much higher than their percentage of the general population. So the Democrat Party has looked at the casualties, the dead people laying out there who died of dehydration, the immigrants themselves, the illegal immigrants themselves, the Americans who have been hurt, and they said, for political reasons, we're willing to take the casualties. It's like a general being told, you're going to take this many losses when you try to take that hill. They've made a determination, and they are going to, let me tell you, they're going to stick to it. Just like missile defense, when we showed that all these countries, and especially China and Russia, were developing this capability to hit American cities very effectively with missiles, and that was coming out more and more, they said, we don't care. Missile defense is Ronald Reagan. We're against it. And by the same token, those people like Hillary Clinton who voted for the border fence, you couldn't drag those people to vote for the fence now with a team of horses. So it's sad, but it's a strategic determination that they've made. And I think what we've got to do is get the people to put enough pressure on them to turn them around on that.
Thank you.
And Dan, I got to apologize too. I'm here with my favorite congressman, which I really enjoy. But I've got to do a radio show. I do like one a year, and I missed it last year in Arizona. And they made me swear on a stack of Bibles 3 months ago that I would be there at 1 o'clock our time, that I would call in. So I gotta go do that, and maybe in 5 minutes. Is that okay?
I understand. We were expecting that.
Is that okay, Duncan?
Yes, sir.
Live interview, national, you know. So we're losing Duncan Hunter, but we got another one. They come in pairs. Thank you for being here, Don Irisman.
Dan, question. Can I go through really quick? Hey, you're a great American. Can I go through kind of what's happening right now at the ground level?
Please do.
Okay. So here's what's happening on the ground level. I went to Yuma, Arizona. I mean, we live on the border pretty much. But I went to Yuma, Arizona with a guy from Wisconsin, a congressman from Pennsylvania, a congressman from South Dakota, and a congressman from Montana. With Andy Biggs, who's an Arizona congressman and has border district, right? These guys could not believe their eyes. And what the Border Patrol did is, well, we were out there at midnight watching people come in droves. Here's what the Border Patrol is up against, and here's what's happening right now. The Yuma, Arizona station is built to hold 220 people. It's a small station. They held over 1,000 when I was there. So there's over 1,000 people in a facility that holds 200-something. There's people outside. There's people, they have fences in little square areas where they have people, because here's what's going on. About half of the Border Patrol right now are not on the border. It's about 50% are not on the border. They're in hospitals with people that get hurt. They have to stand there. By Border Patrol code and law, you have to have an agent with them. So whenever somebody gets hurt for anything, whether it's the flu or they broke a foot trying to jump the fence, it takes two agents being paid by the American taxpayer to go to the hospital and stand there with that person. Okay, so that's happened. So you have, and you also have a huge percentage of Border Patrol simply processing people in now. Because when you get, imagine getting hundreds of people a day coming in, and you're equipped to handle 20 a day, the agents are now processing. So the drug cartels know this. This is a drug cartel driven catastrophe on the border. Because here's what they do. They'll send 100 people over. You have bosses on the other side of the border. They're like pit bosses there for the drug cartel. I mean, they're in charge of all the drugs and all the people that pass through their section. They're the ones that get paid by the illegal aliens coming north. They get paid by the drug cartel for doing this. So what they'll do is they'll send 200 people over at this point in Yuma, Arizona, knowing that their drug guys are going across at this point at the same time. And they'll time it. So all the Border Patrol have to go intercept with buses. The Border Patrol drives down buses to the people who come across and wave their hands saying, here we are. Families, supposed families, hundreds of people at one time. Then they send their drugs across 5 miles in a different area where they know that there's not going to be any Border Patrol because it's all coordinated. The Border Patrol, thanks, Jim. The Border Patrol then comes back and they have to take all these people back and process them. And the guys on the other side of the border know exactly how to play us. It's just, it's a common diversionary tactic, and it's being used throughout the entire border. So you're having tons of drugs get through because the guys on the other side that have $1 billion organizations with drugs and criminality, they're not stupid. They know exactly how to work us so that they can get the drugs across and the people. So, and here's what happens with the people, with these kids. And the Border Patrol came out yesterday and said, or 2 days ago, 30% of the children coming across are rent-a-kids, meaning human trafficked children. Human trafficked kids that are being used by these groups coming across so that they can get out of Border Patrol custody within 21 days. There was a court case called the Flores decision. This is one of the things that Congress has to change legislatively. If you have a family unit with a minor, you're mandatorily released within 21 days. It's mandatory. On your own recognizance to wherever you want to go to with ankle bracelets on, which can be cut off with scissors. And the Border Patrol has to take you to where you say you want to go to. The Border Patrol right now is spending about $100 million of taxpayer money a year transporting illegal aliens to different parts of the nation. So here's what happens. They come across with a kid in a diversionary tactic so that the drug guys can move drugs in a different area with no fence. They come across. It takes like 10 Border Patrol guys in buses, have to pick them up at the border, bring them back to the station, start processing them and checking for measles. When I was in Yuma, Arizona, they had their first outbreak of measles at that night while I was there in the station. They bring these people back, they talk to the kids, they talk to the parents, they all have the same story. They say they're going to see Uncle Joe in Charleston, South Carolina. The Border Patrol has to release them within 21 days. And remember, there's over 1,000 people in a facility made for a few hundred. So the Border Patrol has to get out 100 or 200 every day in order to bring in more. That's why the mayor of Yuma declared a state of emergency for this city 3 weeks ago when I was there. Because of this happening, because the Border Patrol was releasing half of the people into Yuma and sending the other half to like Phoenix where they could be out processed. So this family, this fake family, goes to Charleston, South Carolina. The Border Patrol tracked a few of these just to see what was happening, and here's what they found. They found that they met up with drug cartel folks in Charleston, wow, who then cut off their ankle bracelets and charged the people for them. It's $7,000 per person to be smuggled from Central America north across the border. Wow. That's what it costs. You can't pay that if you're Guatemalan. You don't have $7,000 in cash. Not any of us have $7,000 in cash lying around. So what you do is you get to the U.S. side and you work your $7,000 off with indentured servitude. So this family, fake family, goes to Charleston, South Carolina. The drug cartel guys that accept them there, put them all in a house with other families in disgusting conditions. They charge this family from Guatemala, for instance, to cut off their ankle bracelets. They get fake social security cards. They get jobs with an unscrupulous landscaping company, drywalling company, electrical company, something like that, that's also owned by bad guys in that area. They then work off, and basically for years and years, that $7,000 per person. The people that take this family in and use them for indentured servitude to make money off of them, then sell the children back home. And they get $1,500 a kid from the drug cartel for each kid that they send back to be used again and trafficked to come north. And that's happening in every single American city right now throughout the entire country. And it's mostly drug cartel driven. They're the ones making money off of it. They're the ones making money off the sale of drugs that get across as they use these families as diversionary tactics. And our Border Patrol guys, imagine your morale if you think you joined the Border Patrol to go secure the border and you're spending 12 hours a day inside simply writing things down and processing illegal aliens and hoping that you don't get scabies or some kind of other sickness from the people that you processed. You have the highest number of Border Patrol men calling in sick and injured now than you've ever had prior to. They're all getting the flu, that they're getting sicknesses that we haven't seen in this country for 100 years. That's what it's like on the border, and it is a national crisis. So that's kind of a layout of what's happening along the entire southern border where you don't have a fence to stop people from stepping over that line, hundreds of people at a time, coming over the line and taking up the Border Patrol resources for that area. That's kind of a snapshot of what's happening.
Wow. Thank you.
Thank you.
Duncan, what can the military do to back up the Border Patrol?
So in my opinion, the military can be used to secure America's borders, period.
Amen.
Period. Just like the National Guard and reservists that built the original landing mat fence that welded that together, and if you go look at it, you can see their emblems on it. Like, you know, the first of the 500th Army Corps Division or something, they have their logos every few hundred meters where they spray painted those logos on the fence. Here's what they can do. They can build road and they can build fence. In fact, I don't know, we tried to get the president to use them 6 months ago to get this thing expedited, because right now in Kansas and Texas and different Army bases, you have Army Corps engineering units moving dirt and building fence and wall to train to move dirt and make roads and build fence and wall in Iraq and Afghanistan. And they're doing it just for training. So we said, bring them here, because the most expensive part of building the border fence is the actual road. That's the hard part. Cutting, filling, scraping, grading, that's the expensive part. The expensive part isn't the fence, putting up a fence in the ground. That's not hard. What's hard is building the road, and the Army engineering guys are well suited to do this, and they're already paid for. I mean, they're already training in Kansas. They're already training in Texas. So have them train on the border, and it costs nothing. So that's what we're really pushing for, but that's one thing that they can do. The second thing I hear, and I don't know for sure, is that the president's looked into the Army building detention facilities. I don't know if I'm for that. I don't know if I want to siphon off our U.S. military assets to watch and take care of and build massive detention facilities that will hold tens of thousands of people, almost like a UN refugee camp on our side of the border. If you secure the border with a wall or a fence, and you can't step on U.S. soil and claim asylum, let me give you another point that clears up some misconceptions. If you live in Pakistan, you can ask for asylum from the U.S. embassy. You can say that you're a Christian in Iraq or Pakistan, and you're persecuted religiously, and some other things, and the U.S. will process and adjudicate your case while you stay in your country of origin. It's not until you step on U.S. soil that we have to then obligated by law to take you in and take care of you. That's why you don't have people coming across by the thousands every week in San Diego, because they can't get across the border fence. That's why it's so important to have the border fence there, because if you come up through Central America, through Mexico, and you come to the border and say, I want to be an asylee, we say, okay, by law, we're required to process and adjudicate your case. You stay in Mexico while we do so. This is a Mexican problem. It's Mexico being a bad neighbor. And President Trump kind of goes from one side saying Mexico's being extremely helpful with us, finally, for the first time in a decade, to they're not being helpful at all. But I think the president, even though it has nothing to do with this, but in a certain way, but this the U.S. MCA, the Mexico-Canada trade agreement that he's working right now, that exhibits and puts a lot of pressure on the Mexicans to be better neighbors as well, because the majority of their economy is reliant on U.S. trade. And so he's able to use that as a lever as well to make them better actors. But they're still not stopping these caravans. They're still allowing their borders to be open as long as they know that you're not going to stop at Mexico, that you're going to make it all the way to the United States.
Thank you. We know where the Democrat Party stands on the border. Most of them are in favor of an open border. I'm not sure where the Republican Party actually is on this. I don't see Republicans in front of television cameras and microphones talking about the crisis and the threat and the drugs and all the crime coming across. Why is that,
Doug? Well, here's the answer. And it's sad. It's politics. Remember, we had a bill that was probably had not the most enthusiastic name. It was called the Goodlatte Bill, named after Bob Goodlatte in Congress, that changed our lottery system, changed the immigration system, changed the asylum laws, built the border fence, changed the whole thing, fixed it. In a Republican-controlled House with a Republican-controlled Senate and President Trump. We couldn't pass it out of the House because we couldn't get enough Republicans to vote for it. So every Republican just about that had Central California and Northern California voted no on it because it didn't fit what they thought was their agricultural needs for their districts. Most of those guys lost this last election. But so now we're in the minority, which is worse, because now we can't do anything. But we had a bill that fixed all this. It fixed every single thing that I've mentioned here today. Fixed all of it. And we only got about, it was 198 votes or so out of 218. So we lost 20 Republicans, and that was enough, because they didn't get one slice of the pie, as opposed to looking at the 90% picture. There were things in it that I disagreed with, too. People's pathway to a green card that are here, how we process. There's some bad parts, even in the Republican bill, but for the good of the country, it's too bad that we couldn't get together and do it, and it was politics. I mean, that's the same reason that Democrats are pro having an open border with all of the disease and the crime and the drugs that entails. Politics is the answer for why certain Republicans were open border as well. I'll give you an example. The last week in the office, it was Wednesday. Wednesday in D.C., the California Ag Association came in. I think that's what it was called. If Mike's here, he can give me the actual name. But basically, all the farmers in California have an association, and they came into the office. They're all conservative. They're all farmers. They're either cattle ranchers, goat ranchers, hay, alfalfa, they're almost all conservative. They were against and lobbied hard against the immigration bill that we tried to pass last year. And so that's what we're up against. So just about, you know, all the Northern and Central Californians, they all voted no on it. A lot of the people on the East Coast that have to deal with migrant workers, seasonal migrant workers, they voted against it as well. And that lost us our 20 votes.
Okay. When I was a kid in San Diego, they had a Bracero program where aliens, immigrants, would come across the border. They'd have a card that allowed them to work on farms in the Central Valley and wherever else, and they would work until the crops were harvested, and then they were paid. And while they were here, they were taken care of. And then they went back to Mexico. Why hasn't that idea, which worked really well for decades, been proposed today?
So that was in the Goodlatte bill. And here's what we even did that I thought was really, really smart. To guarantee that the person goes home, because that's the hard part of this, is how do you guarantee the person doesn't just disappear into the U.S. and you never hear from them again? We had a thing where we withheld, I think it was 10 or 15% of their pay. We withheld it. Until they go home, then they get paid that extra 10%. So they didn't earn all of their money until they could prove that they were home. They checked in. They went back to their country of origin. Then they got their money. Then they could come back across and do it again. So we had that in there, and we had, I think, a better way to do it that made sure that the people went home to their country of origin and then got their money and then could come back across. And to make it, and we have in this bill too, is E-Verify, which Ken Calvert, who's a congressman just north of Temecula, has Riverside. He invented E-Verify about 15, 20 years ago. And what's wrong with checking to make sure that companies have to hire American workers? That's nuts. That by itself hasn't been passed. That magnet that brings people across, people that are looking for a better life, that aren't transporting kids, that aren't transporting drugs, that actually come here because they want to work, unless you have something like E-Verify in, it's not fair to them. And it's not fair to the millions of Americans that either work for a company or own a company that have to compete with people that are making $6 an hour when a living wage is $20 an hour, for instance, in the construction business.
Will there ever be a comprehensive immigration bill passed in Congress? Or would you recommend that it be done piecemeal?
I don't want a comprehensive bill. A comprehensive bill, here's what you'll have in it. You'll have 60 or 70% good, 30, 40% bad, especially once the Senate gets involved. That goes up exponentially. And depending on who's on charge, it could be 30 or 40% good and 60 or 70% bad. And then all the people that represent the American people have to determine, are the good parts, do they outweigh the bad parts? And sometimes they do, sometimes it comes out even, and sometimes they don't. I'd rather have it be piecemeal. I'd rather have you at least have separate bills. Because let me give you an example. The Goodlatte bill was a great bill, but it didn't get the agriculture votes. But here's what happens on piecemeal votes when it comes to politics and legislation. You'll have guys say, I'm not going to vote for your border security bill unless you make the visa bill look like this. So even though it's not all one piece, we probably still wouldn't have gotten those California Central Valley Republican votes that we needed to pass it. Right? But I'd rather do it piecemeal, meaning do border security first, do E-Verify first, stop the hole in the boat that's causing it to leak first, then we'll work on immigration reform, because it's two different things. One's a national security issue, and one is about illegal immigration, and those things should be separate, because number one, they're two totally different things, and number two, it's too complex, I think, to get any Congress to vote on a massive reform bill like you're talking about. And let me give you an example. Zoe Loughran, a Democrat from California, pretty far-left lady, she has a comprehensive immigration bill that she's working on right now. It's probably not going to be a great bill. That's just my guess. I'll look at it with an open mind, but I'm guessing that a far-left California Democrat congresswoman is not going to have a bill that I support.
Okay. Tell me about the Border Patrol. They're outmanned. They're overwhelmed. They're understaffed. Is there help coming for the Border Patrol? And the second part of that question is, do they support the wall?
They 100% support the wall. They understand how important it is and how it allows them to do their jobs better. They are for the border wall 100%, especially the new fence that's in Calexico that's going to be going up in Yuma. They can see through it. You can't scale it. You can't use a grappling hook to get over it. They're 100% for it. Number two, their morale is massively low right now because they're spending their nights in hospitals. They're spending their nights processing. And the only reason that they're, call it, understaffed is because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing in the first place. They're doing all these administrative things. They're taking care of 200 people coming over at one time with kids, and they have to take care of them, right? That's why they're understaffed. They're not understaffed if they didn't have to do that, and if our laws were fixed so that you couldn't just step across the border and have the American taxpayer take care of you, then they would not be so understaffed. And they have people quitting right now at a higher rate than they've ever had. Because once again, you're 18, you're 20, 24 years old, you want to work on the Border Patrol, secure the border, and you're in a hospital every night with a guy that broke his leg or had a heart attack or knows that he has a heart problem and walks across the border anyway, says, I have a heart problem. He's then, we're on the hook as American taxpayers to make sure his heart gets fixed. And they know this. I mean, the people that are coming here illegally, they all have cell phones. They all know what's going on. They all know where to cross. They all know where the Border Patrol is weakest. They all know where there's no wall, where there's no fence. They know this stuff. Social media, I think, is one of the major dynamics that has caused this influx. Two big things. You didn't ask this, Dan. Why now? Why are we having this problem now, when our amnesty laws have been this way for years, decades? right? Why the big influx of thousands of people a week now? Two things, I think. One is people throughout the world think that Trump is going to secure the border, right? So they're coming in now to beat it being secured. Number two, they now know because of social media exactly what to do, what to say, what laws to cite, what to claim. They now know. Even if you're in Guatemala, you have access to the information that allows you to exploit American law. It's never been that way before, ever. You now have information that you need at your fingertips. And they know exactly what to say, they know exactly what the law is, and they know, if anything, the words to say to where the Border Patrol can't say, sorry, you're going to go back over. That's how they know to bring a child with them. You know, I don't know if you guys knew their stat, in Yuma, Arizona, over 94% of everybody coming across had kids. 94%. So they all know this. Meaning the people throughout the world know that the way to get in here is to bring a kid with you. And that's what's providing for the human trafficking, the money that they pay for children to be sent back home, to be used again, and just bad things. So that's kind of the layout there.
Very good. Here's a hypothetical. If you were in the Oval Office, what would be the top three priorities you would have for securing our border? One, two, and three.
Sure, one is have the military do it now, like now. Have those units do it now. And when I say it, I mean a double fence with a high-speed road in between it, lights on it, cameras on it. If you do that, it alleviates a lot of the needs for other things, right? If you just do that, you take away all the other things that the Border Patrol are dealing with and all the bad things that are happening. Number two, that's going to push guys out to the oceans, right? That's what they do. And so you would have to put more people out in the oceans. You do those two things and you do e-verify and take away the magnet, I think those would, your immigration would decrease by 90%. It's kind of like healthcare. Healthcare is really complex, right? And that'd be a really fun time talking about that, but healthcare is complex. With all the insurance stuff and the hospitals and doctors and Medicare and Medicaid, it's a complex thing. If you allow people to buy healthcare across state lines, I mean, you can buy healthcare from a Kentucky health insurance company, right? It reduces your pay into that healthcare system by like 75%, meaning it drops it massively. It's the exact same thing with the border fence. If you secure the border, it alleviates 90% of the other problems and makes it much easier to handle on a much smaller scale. That's how you do it. So Trump's doing the right thing. He's doing the right thing slowly but surely, and it's the last thing that he promised that he hasn't given the American people yet. So, and I think he understands that as well. He wants to fulfill his promise, and he's doing it now. It's just taking a little while.
Thank you. Totally different subject, but very important, especially right here in San Diego. With Memorial Day coming on Monday, what would it mean to you for President Trump to pardon Navy SEAL Chief Eddie Gallagher? What should we know about this case, and why is it so important?
Do you want me to go through the whole thing, or just?
From the beginning to the end.
Okay. So,
please.
So here's what would happen. There were a bunch of ISIS bad guys in Iraq, outside of Mosul. It was like the last battle of Mosul. We bombed the building and killed between 40 and 50 ISIS fighters, okay? With the Iraqi military and some Navy SEALs. One ISIS terrorist made it out alive. with blast lungs, made out alive with his rifle. The Iraqis promptly shot him in the inside of his leg. The Iraqis there then interrogate him on video, in a propaganda video, which you can look at. It's on taskandpurpose.com.
Yes.
So if you go to taskandpurpose.com, you can see the video, I think it's Al Jazeera, of the Iraqi special forces interrogating this kid that happened to live. And kid, I mean 17 years old. They had him for an indeterminable amount of time. And it was an indeterminable amount of time since we tried to kill him. And the Iraqis got a hold of him after shooting him. The Iraqis performed no medical treatment whatsoever. And you can tell that this guy is dying on this video. The Iraqis then, after an indeterminable amount of time, because we don't know, gave him, basically dumped him off to the Navy SEALs. There was a little Navy SEAL base, a platoon of about 15 guys. They dumped this guy off. Chief Eddie Gallagher is on video saying, "I got him." The guy's then laid down on the ground. He's not moving. Looks dead as it is. Eddie could tell he was shot in the leg. The first thing he does, the last part of the video, is Eddie cutting open the guy's pant leg to perform medical aid. I saw the video, and I showed the video to about a dozen other congressmen who are helping out on this case. We then have pictures of the process of the SEALs providing aid to this terrorist, trying to save him, trying to save a guy that we tried to kill 2 or 3 hours earlier. There's piles of medical packaging. The guy's got a crate, which is like a tracheotomy, tube going down his throat because he had blast lung from being bombed. He has needles and medical padding on both of his sides because they tried to expand his lungs again and open up his airways so he could breathe. You have all of this stuff, and the guy died anyway. Okay? The Iraqis that were there want to come testify on Eddie's behalf. So here's what happens. Eddie was a Navy chief, around 40 years old. I think he's 39. 19 years in the Navy, 8 or 9 combat tours. He's done it all, too, from corpsman to sniper. There was a disagreement in their platoon. So a year after coming back, some of the SEALs in his platoon basically came to the agreement that they would accuse Eddie of killing the ISIS terrorists. Okay? Because Eddie did one bad thing that I'm guilty of too. Taking a picture with the body and saying something stupid. And then texting that. So he took a picture with the body, with his knife out, and texted it to some buddies and said, "I got this one with my knife." Okay? I've taken pictures just like that when I was overseas. Didn't text them to anybody, didn't put them on Facebook or Instagram, but a lot of my peers, a lot of us, have done the exact same thing. The problem is the knife was clean and found no blood DNA on the knife whatsoever. Eddie's hands were clean in this picture. The knife is clean in the picture. His hands have no blood on them in the picture. And the dead Iraqi terrorist, the ISIS fighter on the ground, has no blood that came from any kind of wound whatsoever. The Navy has all of this. So here's what the Navy did. The Navy took Eddie out of his brain treatment at Camp Pendleton and arrested him. They then raided his house and took his two boys in their underwear outside at gunpoint with their masks on, with their NCIS Navy masks, full gear, 5 o'clock knock in the morning, and took the kids outside at gunpoint because they wanted Eddie's cell phone and some other stuff. It was almost like watching really bad people in places like Ukraine or Georgia or Russia taking down people that don't agree with them. The Navy did that, put Eddie in the Miramar brig last September. Last September, September 11th, actually. The Miramar brig is the sex offender brig for the Navy. It's where the pedophiles are, where the rapists are, where the sex offenders are. Eddie's kids couldn't come in and see him at all because they didn't want the population getting excited. Eddie couldn't read a USA Today or a Wall Street Journal or see anything on his case because there's pictures in USA Today that might excite the population. That's where he was until President Trump intervened. Eddie's now at Balboa Hospital. His court date is May 28th. And the president has talked about pardoning him. A special forces guy who's a buddy of mine named Matt Goldstein, who got trouble for killing an Iraqi bomb maker and an IED maker. But here's what's going on with Eddie's case. The main question is, absolutely, I would love to see Eddie pardoned and see his family stop going through this. But I also want the American people, at least people paying attention to this case, to see how disgusting the military justice system is when it's run by lawyers and bureaucrats and goes after the warfighter. That's what a trial is for. So the answer is, how do you expose? And by the way, we just found out 2 weeks ago that the Navy prosecutors embedded malware, spyware, into the emails that they sent the defense attorneys, so that the defense attorney's computer information and anybody that they sent emails to would be given to the Navy prosecutors. Isn't that crazy? That's nuts. In fact, it became so bad that the Navy's legal chief of staff just wrote a scathing article. The Air Force is doing an investigation into the Navy. But that's how corrupt the military justice system is against our warfighters, and we only handle a fraction of these cases. Because your congressional office is the last folks you call after you've tried every other way to resolve your case. And then you're judged by bureaucrats and lawyers that have never seen a moment of combat time in the context of being stateside where it's safe on their nice base. That's who you're judged by that perspective, in that context. Like you're a police officer on the streets of Ramona. That's how you're judged. As opposed to Clint Lawrence has been in jail for 5 years for killing two Iraqis on a motorcycle that wouldn't stop from approaching his checkpoint. Trump might pardon him too. He's one of the other names mentioned. Lawrence shouldn't be in jail at all, but he is because of a broken system. And I would argue that our regular justice system is just as abusive as the military justice system, because it's not about justice. It's about wins. How many wins can they get? How famous can they get to move up the ladder in the military, get that next promotion? And then the Department of Justice here, how famous can they get? And can they run for Congress next term if they have a big case? That's what we face in our justice system. So it's too much. There's too much of an ability for those in power that work for the U.S. taxpayer to use the legal system to abuse the warfighter. And that's the problem with the system overall. So to answer the question, I would like to see it go to trial. Part of me wants to see it go to trial to embarrass the Navy and maybe give an example of how we can change the system. But at the same time, I would hate to see his family and him go through that. And it's not fair. It's not fair when the prosecution cheats. It's simply not fair. And let me tell all of you, if any of you get in trouble for anything, the last 20 years of your text messages are available to be used against you in a court of law. That's how it works. So being your emails, your text messages, they can now use that against you. They use it in the military. They use it in our normal justice system, and they love it. So be careful what you text.
Duncan, thanks for being here so long today.
Thanks for having my dad, too. He enjoys that.
Can we give our audience a chance to ask you a question? Maybe just two questions. Not a statement. It's about the border. If anyone has a question, please come on over here. Hi.
I just wanted to ask you, why have so many of our checkpoints inside of California been shut down?
Sure, easy one.
It used to be on 5, and it used to be on 15.
Because those guys are all being used to process thousands of illegal aliens. They've tapped all of their people to be able to process the hundreds of people a night at each sector. I saw Coast Guard personnel. I saw Army National Guard in Yuma. They're taking anybody they can get to help process people. Anybody. So you have Coast Guards people, Coast Guardsmen processing illegal aliens so that that frees up the Border Patrol guys to either go do their job or process more illegal aliens administratively. But that's an easy one. That's why.
Well, the same thing happened, though, in Cuba. We were stationed in Florida during the Cuba crisis where people were coming over, and when they got within a certain distance, my husband was at Opa-locka, which is outside of Miami, and they were required to bring them in. And they did the same thing. They took all the guys from the Coast Guard bases there, and they were sent over to process all these people.
Yeah, and that, well, I was on some Coast Guard ships about 3 or 4 years ago. They were still doing the same thing. But it was called the foot dry policy. If you stepped on American soil, you were considered, especially from Cuba, and that goes back to kind of, I think it was Ronald Reagan that was allowing for the people to escape the communist regime there. Right? And if they could make it to U.S. soil, then you got to become an American citizen.
Right? Did you state your name before you asked a question?
And by the way, I think it's okay to have one-off policies, like Cuba. Like, if you look at what's happening in places like Ukraine, like the way that we treated Russian and German scientist defectors, it's okay to want people who can contribute to your society. It's okay to allow them in and say to other folks, hey, you're not part of that group, or you don't have those things to offer, so you need to go through the slow, regular process that proves that you want to become an American.
Okay, thank you. The Democrats and rhinos who have voted in the past for funding border wall, did they do it just to get votes, and they knew that the building wouldn't really happen? And instead of trying to pass new immigration bills, wouldn't it be more efficient to repeal, such as the 1965 bill, repeal the bad bills?
So to answer the first question, no. I think that in the past, people in politics, in Congress and the Senate, voted to secure the border because they knew that it needed to be secure. I mean, if you look at it logically, why in the world would you not want to know who's coming into your country and what they're bringing with them and why they're coming in? See, I mean, Democrats aren't illogical people, right? They aren't. And Democrats aren't stupid people, right? So why would they voted to secure the border because they believe in a secure border, and they know that you have to know who's coming in and that you have to have a secure border to know who's coming into your country. Otherwise, why have an immigration policy at all? Right? So the answer is they did believe in a secure border. I think Hillary Clinton believed that we should secure the southern border. That's why she voted for the Secure Fence Act in 2006. Okay? I think Obama thought that too. In fact, you could see on the news Obama talking about the crisis at the border and why it needed to be secure. He talked about that. Out of all presidents, Obama talked about that. Right? Politics has made them forget what they really believed in because they want to get the votes. It's that simple. It's all wanting to be reelected, and it's all the power of politics. That's it. And the Ocasio-Cortezes, the Omars in Congress now, the super far left people that are self-proclaimed socialists, Ocasio-Cortez has more Twitter followers than anybody in politics except President Trump. So if you don't think she's swaying those moderate Democrats, like Hillary Clinton portrayed herself to be, then you're wrong. The far leftists are influencing what you would call logical Midwest Iowa Democrats. They're being influenced because they don't want to lose their elections. And the repealing, I think in the end, if you repeal something, it's hard to repeal something that like 55 tentacles have been attached to and go out from,
yeah.
Right? That are good things. So what you want to do is change it.
Will you come visit the Murrieta Border Patrol?
So yeah, absolutely.
Okay, because there's people coming in there with buses.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're asking the president to what the president needs to do is what he threatened to do a couple of months ago, and that's to send the illegal aliens that are being dropped off to cities that want them.
Yeah.
And those are sanctuary cities. So absolutely. Why? Los Angeles, San Francisco? Absolutely. They'll be happy to have it.
Duncan, on Memorial Day, thanks for being here, sir.
Thank you.
I appreciate you coming.
Such a fun.
And to our audience, thanks for being here. I'm proud of you. Appreciate the support. You can use a little money in the jar out there on your way out. And next month, we'll see you at the Content of Character series. It's worth your while. It's fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless you. Good job, Dan.
Oh, June 15th, I'm sorry. I finally admit, that was worth 10 mistakes. On June, hey, listen, everybody listen up. You guys going out the door, turn around, I got good news. June 15th, we